Cannabis Business Minds, we train and mentor professionals, entrepreneurs, and aspiring entrepreneurs on how to confidently find their place in the legal cannabis and hemp industries. Come on and join us at CannabisBusinessMinds.com.
On today's episode of Cannabis Business Minds, we have got a very interesting kind of take of what it is to think about cannabis entrepreneurship and something that a lot of you might not think about, and that is how secure your files are. And especially if you are working with patients, if you are, even if you're a business and working with customers, that data is really, really important and can be breached. And in fact, most small businesses, more than 70% of small businesses have had some sort of cyber crime and cyber attempt. And when you add in cannabis, a little bit more complicated when you think about regulation, when you think about a dispensary owner dealing with a lot of patients and healthcare is actually one of the industries that cybersecurity is one of the most important for because there are so many data breaches. And on today's show, I get to talk with an expert, a veteran in cybersecurity who has more than almost two decades of expertise working in this industry. And we're going to have him on the show. So Corey White is going to join us from Los Angeles, and I'm really excited to hear from him about what he's up to and all of that. I mean, I'm just excited to get the lowdown on everything related to cybersecurity because I think many entrepreneurs, we don't really take it seriously, especially from the very startup phase. If you even add in cannabis businesses that are just trying to get their license and are maybe going through that licensing process and then focused in their first few years of operations, they hardly even have a good financial framework. Like they don't have a lot of controls in general. And I really don't believe it's on people's agenda to really start thinking about cybersecurity. But then when you start doing the research and you look at the facts, you know, small businesses are heavily compromised. Like the healthcare industry, like just some of the stats are pretty impressive in a negative sense of how it can impact a business. And so I'm glad to get you on to talk about this and to kind of give us some education around what cybersecurity is, but why it matters for cannabis businesses or in businesses in general.
Yeah, that's a really good setup. Thank you for that. It's interesting. So the cybersecurity industry has really evolved. Mm-hmm. It used to be that the hackers were hacking after targets. And they were after whether it be personally identifiable information or finance, whatever it could mm-hmm. be. But now everybody is a target because of ransomware, okay? And right now it's a bit relevant. We talk about the Russian attacks, cyber attacks that are potentially coming. Well, here's the thing: they already have been doing that for a very long time. Not just the Russians, but everybody, like globally. So there's a big cyber war going on. But now, if you reframe that and think about it, it's not really a war. It's just mm-hmm. if I have a choice between and I want to be malicious, going to work and working out at a convenience store or something, or sitting at home and getting a bunch of emails and dropping them into a ransomware as a service solution that you can get off the internet and just freely populating my Bitcoin account. Because to your point, Simone, these small to medium sized businesses have no security, but they mm-hmm. have money. Okay. Yeah. And so if I hit up, 100 of them and get, 5,000 a piece, for a moment and ransom and they don't know what else to do. And they just, pay it via Bitcoin. And I never left my house. And all this is automated. So it has become, the hackers are treating it like a business. So we have to think that it's an actual business owner attacking another business owner for profit. And so it is completely changed the narrative. And so when you look at the news and you see all these large companies getting hacked, well, you don't hear about the small ones. No. Here's why. We estimate between 250 to 500 attacks happen per day. And the reason why we don't know the exact number is because everybody doesn't report it. Yeah. Nobody wants to say, hey, I got hacked today. Nobody says that. It could be even higher than that. Yeah. So, the challenge is these small businesses, they don't feel like they can afford cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. And so it absolutely needs to be democratized and made, you know, affordable for small and medium-sized businesses. Second, they don't know what to do. Okay. Yeah. Like, what do they do? And the cybersecurity industry is not making it any easier. Like, I could rant on, but I'll let you dive in.
Okay. Well, it's interesting because just to unpack it is how do, I think someone might be asking, like, well, hold on. I have got G Drive. I've got my little business that's being set up. Like, how's the, I think we can even just go back from the very beginning of like, how do people even get access to information that can be used for ransomware? I think that's a big area where maybe these small businesses have no idea. I know that when people like startups that are, let's say, pre-revenue, they're always trying to cut corners when it comes to cost and sharing passwords and all of these things. And when I was doing research, it's like, it was like 98%, and I forget the source at the moment, but 98% of the breaches were because of human error. Does that sound aligned with your experience in this space?
Well, I think it's human error based upon them not being properly educated. So yeah. If you think about it, if I wanted to attack you or anybody else out there, then I would first start researching you, finding everything that I want. Now, what has changed is social media. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I could easily research you and figure out where you are in the world, where your next trip may be, because everybody shares everything. Yeah. And so once I see, oh, you're going to be here in this country, then I'll look and I'll see, it's called spear phishing. And mm-hmm. the reason why spear is very specific to you, that mm-hmm. I'll say, oh, I saw you where, you know, here, you just traveled to London and you went to, you know, this event. I was there too. Mm-hmm. I didn't get a chance to talk to you. I'd love to chat. Can we just, you know, connect? Here's my LinkedIn, or here's a connection. Here's how you can connect with me. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, yeah, I was there. Cool. I missed somebody I should have spoken to while I was there. And so human nature means I want to go and talk to them. So you click the link, but the link, it may actually take you to like a legitimate website, but it also in the background will download some malware to give them access to your computer. So it's just that simple. That's what's changed.
Yeah. Wow. It's so simple. And I think also preparing for this, it's like there's two types of businesses, those that know that they've been hacked and those that don't know that they've been hacked. And I'm curious, it's like, how does it take time? How long is it that when maybe a system's been compromised that person or that business is even aware of it? And is it because of the ransomware or an outreach or like what from, hey, you've downloaded this, something's working in the background, to, oh my God, what's happening? Like, what does that time frame look like?
I love that stat. That's one of my favorites. I used to talk about that quite a bit. Back in 2012, I built a new service called a compromise assessment, because all these companies were already, you know, breached already. I'm like, well, yeah. I'm gonna tell you where you're breached, then we'll come in and fix it for you. That was kind of how I worked at the time. Mm-hmm. So the time frame, check this out, it is between 200 and 300 days. Okay. All right. Yeah. And so here's the clincher. The reason why it is that range is because once they actually figure it out, it's not them figuring it out. It is usually, you know, the FBI or some law enforcement agency knocking on the door and saying, hey, you're compromised. Your data, we found this on the internet, you know, with some hacker group or whatever. And it's been several hundred days since the actual hack has happened. Because the hackers back in the day is interesting. You know, when I first started, and I'm sorry, I'm dating myself, but back 27 years ago, they used to deface the websites and leave something cool. You would know you were hacked. Well, if you think about being a criminal, like if I were to break into someone's house, why would I leave some sign that I've actually have done it? I would just, you know, break in, steal what I want. And then if it takes a while to realize that their jewels are gone, then it's just that much longer for them to trace and figure out who I was and what I did. Same thing in cybersecurity. So in cybersecurity, they break in, they're in the background. Yeah. And it's interesting. With ransomware, I think it's important for the audience to understand. Ransomware used to be just malware. It used to be one system encrypted. Well, the hackers realized that it was one system encrypted. Companies was like, who cares? We'll just rebuild that one system and lose the data. So the ransomware hackers got smarter. It wasn't just one system. They actually turned it into an actual hack. So what that means is if you don't use multi-factor authentication and you think about now, everything's in the cloud. So there's no corporate firewall protecting you. So username and password. Okay. So if you have a weak password, and frankly, if you're not using multi-factor authentication today, then you're in a very bad spot. And so for all the listeners, please enable multi-factor authentication. You know, every single thing, you know, commercial thing pretty much uses it nowadays. And if it doesn't use it, then switch. You think about your bank, enable it. You know, Gmail, enable it. You know, everything supports it, so enable it. Just a text message back will help. But it's better than a username and password, because just imagine me being a guy, I've done so many incidents. The hackers have your password. Just think of it that way. As long as you want to make it, they can crack it. They can get to it quickly. So you need that second factor. The other thing just about these hacks, just to be clear, is that so they're hacking in, getting through your username and password if you just have that. Or if you haven't patched your system, they can launch an exploit and get onto your system. Easy to get into unpatched systems. And then lastly, once they get onto those systems, they're dropping their tools, their key loggers, every single keystroke you type. And then they have all the things that you log into. They have all the passwords, have everything that you log into. And then they go and they disable your backups because they have admin at that point. They disable your backups and they look and see through your financials, how much money do you actually have? That's what makes them determines what ransom they're going to set. Now, if you're broke, you know, they may only set a ransom for $1,000, or they may just carry on. But I saw a small five-person financial company here in Los Angeles did an incident about 5 years ago for them, and the ransom was like $50,000. And I was like, wait, that is way high for the size of your company. I'm pretty sure they have hacked in. They know how much money you have potentially in an account. That's why they set that. We did the forensics after we got them back up and going. And sure enough, they had hacked in 2 weeks prior. You could see them pillaging through accounts and looking through their network. And they saw what, you know, their financial statements looked like. And that's how they set the ransom. So the long and short of that is really simple. It's not just malware. It is a comprehensive hack where they're hacking in and doing steps to make sure that they get paid. That's all it is.
I mean, when you said it at the very beginning, like it's like a business for them. They're just trying to be as efficient as possible, get exactly what they need. And they're running, although it's a completely illegal and like malicious business, a pretty streamlined operations, it seems like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
That's just, it's so wild to hear that. And because I'm obviously trying to put this into my own experience of like, okay, even like a lot, I think about with COVID and with working remotely and a lot of online entrepreneurs, I'm sure that this has almost accelerated some of the, I guess, the hacks. Like, have you seen that in the last 2 years with the pandemic, that there's more hacks just because of remote work?
Yeah, absolutely. And you think about it, I was just, you know, remember back in like 2006-07, I was doing a pretty large incident with a bank. And then I realized that why would anybody physically rob a bank in this day and time? Okay. Yeah. So think about it. You know, you could just do everything online and do the hack that way. So, and it's much harder to trace. There's no cameras tracking what you look like, all that. And so you take the prevalence of the hacks that are happening, especially during the pandemic. It was really sad because it was so many companies that didn't have their traditional cybersecurity controls in place. They had to switch to remote work. And yeah, I just remember some of the white hat, you know, cybersecurity community, you know, they were, you know, pleading with the hackers, do not hack healthcare organizations, because you can look at it from two sides, right? My healthcare organization in the middle of the pandemic, already, you know, crippled with all these patients they have to take care of and people dying around them. And then a hacker hacks in and takes down their network and they can't take care of patients. And then in their mindset, from the hacker's mindset, is, oh, they have to pay. They're guaranteed to pay because we took down their network at a critical time. And that just becomes just a human condition failure. I mean, yeah, that just takes it to a whole nother level. There's one thing to hack a healthy, this sounds horrible, a wealthy individual.
Robin Hooding, right?
Yeah, exactly. But a healthcare organization during the pandemic that is trying to take care of patients and save lives, you know, those hacks were happening and it was just painful to watch.
Yeah, no, and I was shocked to see that, like, most in general, like, healthcare organizations seem like there's more hacks from the research that I did. Like, there was more hacks in those organizations. And then the actual dollar amount of the impact is significantly higher than other industries. But to me, I could justify, like, that quick kind of research. Well, this is personal information. This is HIPAA. This is so much. But I guess from your experience working in so many different industries, if that stat is aligned with your experience, why is it that hackers are really trying to go towards healthcare more, or why is the cost so much more expensive for a healthcare industry or help like somebody in that industry if they're hacked?
Yeah, this is a perfect storm that's been brewing for a very long time. Mm-hmm. So a little bit about the healthcare industry. So the healthcare industry, their primary goal is patient safety. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so if you say, well, you need to have multi-factor authentication mm-hmm. on your nurse's station, and that slows down them taking care of a patient, then they're not going to do that. Right. You know, and you think about it, if you or I were in a hospital in an emergency situation, and then the nurse is like, oh, let me type in my code. Yeah. You're like, what the hell? You fix me, whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's a crazy balance. Mm. So the healthcare organizations have always leaned toward patient safety, which I agree with, obviously. But there's always been this crazy, you know, push and pull kind of scenario where they're trying to figure out how can we be secure, but also not affect patient safety. And it's been a lot of misinformation going around, and different studies say one thing or another. So what that led us to is where we are today. If I'm a hacker, then the ripest target is a healthcare organization that is not focused on actually being secure. They're focused on patient safety. And then it also, they have to pay the ransom because, again, patient safety is what they want to get. And they can't do that if their systems are down. So yeah. They're more money and they're a ripe target. So it's unfortunately a perfect storm.
It is. And I'm just trying to think about, like, okay, so I almost like I see this ecosystem, right? We've got a lot of vulnerable entrepreneurs and businesses, those that are wanting to help others, usually going to be like the most vulnerable, hardest hit, and probably don't have as much cash. And in cannabis, that's probably a lot of cannabis businesses. Then we've got these hackers. And I'm curious about this. Like, are there, from your experience, multiple organizations? Are there, like, you know, onesies, twosies, like little like solopreneurs deciding to be hackers? Like, what does that ecosystem look like, if any, if there's even data around it? I'm sure there's data, and I'm curious if you have any, if you can shed any light that's not super confidential, if you have any clearances that you can't break, whatever. But I'm curious, like, how that ecosystem on the other side is.
Yeah, I think it's the answer is both. Okay. Right. So you'll have individual kind of hackers just trying to kind of doing their things. Then you have your hacker groups like Anonymous that are currently, you know, their mindset is they want to do hacks for good. You know, so they're hacking, you know, Russia right now, and they have successfully done some hacks there. Mm-hmm. Then you have, hacker groups like DarkSide. These are all public, you know, organizations, but like DarkSide, they're the ones that hit Colonial Pipeline. And they claim that they make, if I have it right, $100 million a year and just ransomware. Okay. Wow. So it runs the gamut, right? It's everything, right? You'll have individuals, you'll have hacker organizations, you'll have, you know, like Anonymous kind of, you know, hacktivism type stuff. You'll have, you know, kind of hacker mafia groups. I mean, it's all of the above.
Yeah. Well, and also when you said, like, you thought about like the robbing the bank and how if you could really do it online, it just seems like, why not? Like, it seems like you're right, a perfect storm. Okay. So just like ecosystems, so you got these vulnerable companies, we've got kind of the different gamut of hackers. Then we've got cybersecurity insurance, which curious, and then we've got kind of, and I want to talk about kind of the democratization of cybersecurity, like to mm-hmm. prevent, like if I looked at this like map of like the players. So then talk to me a little bit about like problems, like the problems and the solutions. So like how do businesses even like, I'm concerned right now, Corey, about my small little online business. Like I'm sure people are like, oh my God, I don't have the budget. I don't know what to do. 203 days. What has been happening? So what are these solutions that are available to calm the storm, right? Like what does somebody do listening to this right now thinking, could this be me?
Yeah. Yeah. So this is a bit of a history lesson, and I'm blessed to have been doing this as long as I have. So when I first started in the mid-90s, literally the internet, web one, you know, just getting started, we were coming in, we were doing, you know, security assessments and penetration testing. A penetration test is where you're going to go into a company and see if we could hack in. And once we hack in successfully, we will document, here's how we got in, here's the steps you need to take to fix it. And networks were relatively simple at that point. Okay. And that continued to evolve. But here's the challenge. And just to summarize where we are now with penetration testing, a penetration test today in 2022. And believe me, I did that for, you know, all the way up till 3 years ago when I started, you know, Cybertar to actually kind of solve some of these challenges. But a penetration test is us coming in, doing an assessment. And then once we finish the assessment, we'll list all your vulnerabilities, tell you exactly how to fix it, and brief you on it. And then we leave and we come back the next year and we do it again. Now, a few things, let me throw some more stats at you. About 50 new vulnerabilities come out every single day. So the minute we do that assessment, the next day it's obsolete. Okay. Now think of it from the perspective of we did that assessment and penetration test. Now, after that, the customer has to fix it. Okay. But if they don't know how to fix it, because 9 times out of 10, they're the ones that create the vulnerability to begin with because they misconfigured something, then it's never going to be fixed. One of the things in penetration testing, security assessment, is that we would realize, hey, you know, every single year when we come in, you'll see the same vulnerabilities over and over year after year. So I started thinking about, why are we doing this? And I talked to a lot of my pen testing friends. And what I really came up to, and this sounds really horrible, is that hacking is fun. Pen testing is fun, right? Breaking into networks is fun. Guess what isn't fun? Remediating the network and patching systems and everything else. So we as an industry are a little backwards. I'll replay that back to you in a different way, Simone. So imagine your car needs to get some work done on. You need the brakes fixed. It needs a tune-up. Okay, you take it in to the dealer, and then they look at it and they hold it for, you know, a few days. Come back and your bill's $5,000, right? And they give you a detailed report of what is wrong with your car, exactly how to do a tune-up, change the spark plugs and fix the brakes, but they don't actually fix it for you. So they charge you a ton of money and give you a detailed recommendation on how you could do it yourself. That's what we're doing in the cybersecurity industry. Okay.
That's so frustrating for the end user, right? Where you're like, yeah. I'm overwhelmed. I just paid so much money and I don't even know what to do after this.
Yeah, that's the first thing that is broken. Okay. Now, the second thing that is broken, we have this thing called Managed Security Services Provider, MSSP. So you would think, okay, cool. I'm just going to outsource all my security to this Managed Security Service Provider. They're going to take care of it. Cool. So, but if you look at them, what they do is they offer a few terms here, which I'll define. MDR, Managed Detection and Response. And XDR, Extended Detection and Response. XDR is newer. So think about Managed Detection and Response. At your home, it is someone that has a Ring doorbell or a camera. Anytime somebody comes into your house, you get an alert. And the minute they try to do something malicious, you get an alert. Okay. And then Extended Detection and Response, instead of just looking at your front door, they're looking at your windows as well. They're looking at more stuff, your whole environment. They've extended it, right? So they're looking at all your windows. So the minute somebody crawls through your window, you get an alert and then try to do something bad. So that's great. But let me throw something at you. What if we actually just closed our doors and our windows and kept them closed all the time and then locked them, okay? MSSPs do not do that, okay? What that translates into is making sure you have multi-factor authentication, patching on your endpoints, blocking malware instead of detecting and responding malware. If you think about a ransomware attack, if I'm only reactive to it, that means the hack is going to happen and I'll send you alerts, say, hey, ransomware is on one of your systems. I don't want ransomware on one of my systems. I don't want it to execute at all. So we have the capability to lock your doors. We have the capability to patch your systems, which is the equivalent. And then we also have the capability to stop the execution of ransomware. We just choose not to. We choose to detect and respond versus actually fix it. So I'll pause there. And there's one area that's also broken.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, because I'm like, I would feel like I need to be taking notes because it's a little intense. So this is kind of, if you decide to like lock all of the doors, lock all of the windows, so somebody theoretically just can't get in, because I think you're right with the other points of everything being broken. It's like, if I even know somebody is hacked into me, if I get an alert that's like, hey, somebody just like jumped through the window and is in your kitchen, I don't know what to do. I am like, okay, do I shut down my computer? They're still in my kitchen. Correct?
Yeah.
They're still in my kitchen. I have to call somebody. I'm in France. I wouldn't even know who to call. And so.
Yeah. To that point, what if you, if they just walked through your house because you left your door open, what if you just closed your door? And so I'll give you, one more area, which you just really highlighted. Now explain how it should be fixed, right?
Yeah.
The next area, when you think about the cybersecurity product landscape, there's over 4,000 cybersecurity products out there and growing. Okay, so to a buyer like you, you're like, okay, where do I start? What do I buy? What do I do? You have no idea. But that's the first step. Once you buy it, then you have to implement it. Okay, then you're like, well, how do I implement this and make sure I'm properly secure? You don't know. Yeah. And so that is also broken. And what needs to happen is, a solution needs to be created to where you can actually just, subscribe to a solution and it just comes in and it's taken care of. You don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
Like in our business, we outsource HR, finance. I suck at finance. I'm happy to outsource finance stuff.
Yeah.
So we outsource all of that and even our development. And so, because I just want the outcome. You want the outcome of saying my systems are secure.
Yeah.
So that is what is broken. And the last thing I'll say really quickly, just so you have perspective around hack. I've done just hundreds and hundreds of incidents in the last 27 years. The hacks fall into two different categories. Mm. Okay. Just to simplify it, I call the first category nation state hacks. And you probably read a lot about these in the news.
No.
And these are the ones that are state-sponsored and sophisticated hackers. They've identified you as a target, and they're coming for whether it be intellectual property or they chose you to be a right ransomware target. So they're coming for you, okay? That is a nation-state targeted attack. I hate to say it, they're probably going to eventually get in, okay?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Just because they're that sophisticated, they know that there's the human error. Like, they know that most businesses aren't set up, so they've got their own way of just getting it.
It's by any means necessary.
Not
gonna stop. Okay, it's like a job. You got 5 weeks get into this target and get this data, and then they're just gonna keep going and going and going, and you can't really stop.
Yeah.
And so the other one is what I call drive-by hacking. So think about, your house, on the street and, car driving by, looking at all the houses. These are all potential targets. But then they see your house. You've got your garage door open. You've got your side gate open as well. When it becomes dark, guess what house they're going to go and target? Yours. And that's the equivalent of saying, we haven't done any patching. We have really weak antivirus that only reacts. It's not doesn't block anything. We don't have multi-factor authentication. We have none of the basics in place. So the minute we click on something, we're compromised. So that's the equivalent. Sorry. So I know I threw a lot at you, but
oh my God. Well, but this is kind of the good segue, because I wanted to clarify when you were throwing some of the stuff at me, the solution that you built. So you've got 27 years of experience. You were doing these assessments and realized all of these pain points. And now you're a founder and you've started your current company, which to me is you democratizing this industry and allowing small businesses to help, like to prevent some of this stuff. So Can you tell me a little bit about, I'm correct, right? Like I've looked at your stuff. I didn't download the demo yet, but like, that's what your business does, is helping people like me or businesses that are, you know, a little bit bigger, but are considered small businesses and probably large businesses as well, with a solution that SaaS that can prevent some of this stuff from happening.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. It's crazy. I failed. I failed for, let's just say, about 22 and a half years.
Yeah.
Right. Because the light didn't come on. And I was talking to one of my previous customers when I first was starting this business, and I was just bouncing ideas off of her. Mm-hmm. And she's a, you know, pretty popular CISO here in the United States. And she's like, well, hey, you know, you can come and do my security assessment. And I'll quote her. She says, I hadn't fixed the shit from last year, but you can come do the assessment. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why would I do that?
Yeah.
Like, why would that makes absolutely no sense unless I'm just out to just make money.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm not at this point in my life. I'm out to make sure that we are actually making a difference. You actually can, you know, make a difference and make money at the same time.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the mantras of our business. So what we figured out, I thought about it. Let me look at this, because I'm experienced in cybersecurity. Yeah. Let me look at this from a customer's point of view. Mm. If I want to be secure, what would I do? Not from a technical cybersecurity expert's point of view, from a customer, what would I do? And then I started looking outside of cybersecurity. I love the way Netflix, Airbnb, Spotify, and you know, I'll just take Spotify, for example. I'm a big, big music guy, right? Yeah. But, and so when I was a kid, again, dating myself, I had 8-track tapes, I had cassette tapes, I had CDs,
oh, yeah.
and then finally MP3s, and then finally streaming happened. And I'm a big Prince fan. So if I want to listen to some Prince, I want to listen to some Lenny Kravitz, I just take out my phone and I can stream anything I want at mm-hmm. any time. So it doesn't matter, because when you think about it, back in the day, I used to have a record player. Okay. I used to have a cassette player. I used to have the physical medium of the record and the cassette. I used to have to drive to the store and buy it and then consume it. And then I started thinking about, wow, I'm so glad I don't have to do that. But yeah. Then you look at cybersecurity, you still have to do that. Okay. Mm-hmm. You got to go and buy the product. You got to go and sometimes go through a value-added reseller. They're going to mark it up even more. So you're paying a lot of money for the product. It's probably still the wrong product you're buying. And then you actually have to, you know, install it yourself. The equivalent of putting a record on a record player, a cassette in the cassette deck. You got to do that yourself. You got to hit play just to get the outcome of listening to the music.
Yeah.
Okay. In cybersecurity, you want the outcome of actually being secure without having to go through all of that crap that I just told you about.
Yeah.
What if you could do that? And I said, wow, mind blown. I'm going to build that. You can just subscribe to us. We have the expertise. I have teams that have done implemented, you know, all the products. They have the expertise. They know how to do it way faster than anybody else. We've done security assessments. We do that for free. Why are we charging to tell you what's wrong? You already know you don't have any security. Why are we going to charge you? Right.
Yeah.
Charge to get you secure. So that's what Cybertar does.
But I think it's really impressive when you have that aha moment. And I think that so often, do you feel like that's when you really were like, this is entrepreneurship, like this, because it's really kind of that tech, looking at it from a UI UX, like the user perspective of really being like, I'm solving a bigger problem and you can solve it at scale. Because I think the reason why I'm so focused on that is like, so often we can continue to do the same thing over and over and over because we know that's maybe what we were supposed to do, or that is the process. And to have, I don't know if it was just that moment of clarity, but to have that moment of clarity, like, no, it has to be done a different way is one thing. And I'm curious. So when you have that, and when you understood that, and then you started thinking about the customer experience and how you could build that, how long did that take? Because you mentioned it's been, you know, what was that process like for you to be like, okay, we got to do it differently. You've got teams to kind of do it, but to mm-hmm. build that solution, like how long did that take? And then just to get up and running and launched.
Well, I got to chime in, you know, my why, and I think the audience would really appreciate this, is that being an entrepreneur, I've never been a follower.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Even, you know, in my consulting, the teams I ran, the divisions I ran it the way I thought it should have been run. It was always very, very different. And so when I left my last company, I realized I started talking to a bunch of other founders, trying to understand, you know, hey, maybe I go work for them. But then I realized I disagreed with what they were doing, their purpose, the driver behind it. And when you end up questioning everybody around you, you got to either you're going to succeed or fail, but you got to go and jump. You got to go and try it. And what I realized is that in cybersecurity, it is pretty much, you know, people building companies over and over again, just, hey, I got this new product. It does this little niche thing. And then, you know, they're like, oh, I do services or I do managed security services. It was all the same buckets. But none of them, like I said earlier, actually solved the problem. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, why would I build that? Yeah. Why don't I actually create a new category of cybersecurity? But this is not something new. This is what Netflix did. It's what Airbnb did. It's what Uber did. They created new categories to actually, you know, democratize their verticals, right? Mm-hmm. Uber and transportation, right? And you know, when I travel, I almost never, like, I haven't rented a car actually in I think 7 years. Wow. Okay. And so I don't want to rent a car. I mean, why would I? It's not the most efficient way to get from point A to point B. So why would I do that? And so same thing with Netflix. They started their business and put Blockbuster out of business, a $1 billion company with a better process. Okay.
Yeah. They had a better process. That's the way to say it. Yes.
Yeah. They had no content when they started. It was just a process of getting it sent to your house.
That is the way to really think about it, with a better process. Same kind of thing in reinventing the way. It's innovation. It's truly innovation, but being able to see and define that process.
Yeah. And what was really counterintuitive for, I think, the cybersecurity industry is that the industry is like, you have to be the best technical mind. You create this new technical thing that does X, Y, and Z. And I actually went backwards. I was like, oh, let's simplify this. Cybersecurity, again, needs to be democratized, especially for small to medium-sized companies that are the bigger targets that don't have any security. So why don't we make this easy, effortless, affordable for small to medium-sized companies and solve a very large problem?
Yeah, that is impressive. And so, you know, who's on your team? How did you do this in the sense of, you mentioned you've got people... You can't, entrepreneurship sometimes feels like a solo journey, but you usually have a team to help support. And so how was that process of like when you started to build this and who you've got on a team to help you get to this space?
Yeah. That just talks a little bit about my life philosophy. I'm very much a universe kind of guy. And I believe totally in synchronicities because they happen all the time to everybody on earth. But I see them when they happen. There are no coincidences in life. Mm-hmm. Things just don't randomly happen. And so you take my journey where, you know, back in, I don't know, God, from 2004 until 2012, I'm running three teams. Okay. I'm running the implementation team for McAfee for the West, right? We're implementing all of the products across customer sites, okay? I am also running the penetration testing security assessment team, telling them all their vulnerabilities, everything that's wrong. And then lastly, I'm running globally the incident response team. And so think about how this works. So a customer will have an incident. So we'll go in and we'll start, you know, responding to the incident. They're paying a lot of money for us to respond to that incident. All hands on deck. And I'm talking to the executives and I'm getting yelled and cussed at. And not because of me, but because of they're upset about the incident and they're, you know, the business at risk. And then the question I will repeatedly get is, wait a second. You did our security assessment. Your team did our security assessment. You told us everything that was wrong and all our vulnerabilities. Okay. Then we paid you also to come and implement the products that we bought. We bought the whole suite, right? Mm-hmm. Why am I now paying you again to do the incident? And I said, well, okay, the assessment tells you what's wrong. It's up to you to fix it. And the products, we implemented that within a week, but it's up to you to maintain it.
Yes.
And then when you get to the incident, then we tell them, well, then what, how does incident happen? Like, well, you didn't fix all the stuff on the assessment, or new vulnerabilities came out, or the systems were bypassed because of detection and response type of solutions, then it didn't actually stop some of these attacks. And then they're like, well, this is broken. And that was in like 2008, 2009. I'm having these conversations. So it goes back to you kind of genuine and being authentic as a human being. Why would I continue having those conversations? I mean, hell, 12 years later, you know, still having the same conversations. We have to evolve. Like, I have to figure out, how did I actually solve this? I wouldn't have a conversation like simply saying, hey, we got you. We got you covered. You're good. You know, all your criticals and highs are all fixed. We're mediated. We're maintaining this in a continuous subscription, as opposed to this one-time activity that I used to do. Sorry, I failed you in the past, but yeah. I used that experience to learn. We got you now. So yeah. That's why and how we approach it.
That's amazing. And then from your team perspective, when you started your company, do you have a co-founder, or is it been kind of you that's charging everything and you've just building your team as you year on year have been growing, or how's the team?
I mean, first thing and foremost, there's no way in hell I could do this by myself.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, I'm so cute. Okay.
Yeah.
I have and he's so calm.
There are some folks that have worked with me across three companies.
Wow. Cool.
And so that's a huge testament to how crazy they actually are to keep on following me and working, in companies that I've been a part of or have built. I'm truly, honored to have, multiple people coming and working again. And so it makes it way easier to create a team that works well together when they already have worked well together.
Yeah.
Okay. And so you also can kind of, cherry pick the best talent for that next evolution of a company that you're building. And so that's what I was able to do here, is bring in some of the best talent that were ready to continue to evolve. And so that helped us build up the team rather quickly. Mm-hmm. And they're able to hit the ground really, really quickly. And I'd be remiss if I did not talk about my absolutely amazing, co-founder, Craig Goodwin. Craig is he's the other side of the coin of me, whereas I've been on the vendor side of things, securing organizations and doing assessments and everything else. He's been the CISO receiving it. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to solve the problem that Craig and I have decided to solve here, you need to see it from both sides. You need to be able to solve that, again, like I said earlier, from the customer perspective. And so what Craig has done is built an absolutely amazing, customer platform and automated all the components that used to drive him freaking crazy being a CISO that he didn't have. Because us as vendor, like, hey, Craig, buy this product. It'll be amazing. You buy the product. And then Craig's like, okay, now I have to implement it and figure this out. Yeah. And so we solved that together. And it is it's kind of the perfect marriage bromance between the two founders. And he's based in London. I'm based here in LA. So we kind of cover the world. People ask, well, where are you guys based? Where's headquarters? I'm like, headquarters is on Earth.
I love that. Yes, yeah.
Yeah, and for the time being, I'm a space, I'm a Trekkie kind of guy. So if we could have a headquarters on Mars, I would.
I will follow up with you in a few years on that.
Yeah,
exactly. All right. Well, before we kind of wrap things up, because I just looked, I was like, oh, wow, we're like, it's almost at the end of the podcast, but I want to know, like, what does leadership mean to you? Because you're clearly a great leader. You've been able to bring, teams with you and build companies. And a lot of entrepreneurs, I mean, the definition to me of entrepreneurship is really being the best leader you possibly can be. What is leadership for you? And what kind of advice can you give our audience on leadership?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I first became a leader in I think it's 2006. And what I do, this is kind of how I think, but if it's something new that I need to pick up, I deep dive in and learn everything about it. So I literally went on to like Amazon and bought every single book on, running a consulting organization and being a leader and everything else, and just started reading through it. One thing that stood out in particular was just because you were maybe the top technical or delivery consultant, you got to forget all of those skills. They do not apply as a leader. People think, oh, this is our best, you know, person. They're going to make them a boss of the team. It's a totally different job, totally different mindset. So I had to reset myself into the mindset of, hey, I actually work for every one of my employees. Mm. And the mindset is, here it's really simple. If every single one of the employees is happy and stress-free and successful, guess what we have as a company? We have a highly successful company. Mm-hmm. So it's the servant leadership approach that really, really resonated with me. And me being, you know, a founder or being the first person in certain last two companies and building a team from scratch, I know what it's like being just the only person there. You're mopping the floors, you're doing the financials, you're doing the assessments, you're doing everything. That is not a fun spot. And so you need the team. You need them to be happy. And I personally, for my, this is just kind of life advice. You hear people talk about, oh, I got to go to work. Oh, it's a job. It should never, ever be a job. I know people say that, you know, hey, do your passion, whatever. But they don't really know what that means. What that means is getting, at least for me, is getting in flow state. When you're just in a flow and time passes, you don't know that, you know, time has passed and you've just done all these amazing things and you're doing what you're naturally good at, what your innate natural skill is. And so you should not be forcing this. It should be a nice flow. And I had an employee that, you know, brilliant, doing an amazing job for us, but I noticed some kind of hiccups. And I just called him up and I was like, hey, you're doing great in these particular areas, but didn't feel like you're in your flow state. What's going on? And he explained some things that are going on. Then he says, you know, I have a few other passions that I've been looking at. And we talked and literally the next day he called me up and said, Corey, you helped me tremendously. I'm actually going to leave and go and do my passion. You know, you really encouraged me. I'd love for us to, you know, to continue to be my mentor and everything else, but I got to go do my thing.
Listen to that.
And I'm like, go as fast as you can. Do your thing because that's you. This is your lifetime. It's not mine. Okay. Yeah. You know what I mean? This is your lifetime to live your life. And so go do it. And I am 1000% happy when people are doing their thing and being in their flow state, whatever it may be. So that's how I look at it from a leadership perspective.
That's brilliant. I love it. We didn't talk about cannabis. So like it's so funny because this is so applicable to cannabis. And, you know, I guess the final question, and maybe we'll have to, you know, I'll get you back on, or we can do maybe a live in a few months with some of our members and all of that. But how's all of this beyond what we've talked about? If I'm a cannabis business, is there an extra layer of caution I should have?
Well, that's a great question. And I wish I had a fantastic answer. Okay. The reality is that it's still unregulated. And it's not like, you know, it's kind of pseudo healthcare. And it's in the middle.
Yeah.
But what I will say is that it is a growing industry. And it is also, when you're a growing industry and you're making money, you are a target.
Yeah.
And so all the things we talked about previously, they all apply to a cannabis business. And, you know, kind of my personal opinion of it is that I'm happy that it's been legalized and most they think that's, you know, happening now. And just tax it. And then we manage it. It is a natural thing on this earth. And so I'm glad to see that's being freed up, because I think this world will absolutely change for the better.
Oh.
And I know a lot of people that have used that for health reasons, and it's really been beneficial. So it's one of those new things that I love that's coming. You have that, you got the metaverse, you got Web3. And for me, I just love diving into that because, like I said, I was here when Web 1 happened. And so I better learn Web 3 and cannabis and embrace this new world that we're living in.
Yeah. Oh, very, very good. And I think the only other thing you mentioned at the very beginning is would be the reputational risk. I would find like if you're a cannabis business and you are probably, I mean, along the supply chain, cultivation, manufacturing, distribution. I feel like with the health stuff, it would be delivery or a dispensary. And if data was breached and, you know, somehow that got out and it's health related, that to me is be such a big component of it for a business to worry about. And then I'm not sure if you know this, but like it is taxed, all right. I mean, taxed at the state level, but because it's still federally illegal, cannabis businesses that are plant touching have to pay taxes on their gross margin. So not on their net income. So it's wild. Like that's what I wrote a book about. Like that's like, to me, the most frustrating thing and why cannabis needs to be descheduled, like, or a Schedule 3 or a 4 is like these businesses are taxed so heavily at the federal level because of its illegality. And so I would say from just a cash flow perspective, making sure that a business, if you're operating in cannabis right now, like you've thought about, you've gone to Sivatar, Corey, I'd love to know how they can contact you or how they can follow you for a kind of thought leadership, but that you've just thought about this because it's a cash flow impact more than anything. I think that, you know, from at least from the CPA financial perspective, it's a huge cash flow risk and reputational risk and something that I think a business needs just to at least think about, even if you are pre-revenue, but you're operating. It's just, yeah.
I mean, to your point, just to nail this home, I think it's really important that people realize is that hacking is for profit. And so if I see that you're a very successful cannabis business and you're making money, think of it this way. This is a crazy twist, but I've seen it happen. I don't want to ruin your reputation. If I ruin your reputation, then I can't make as much money off of you. If I'm on the back end and I have access into all your systems, and I'm able to, you know, whether it be siphon out some money or ransom you every single year, and you're making a ton of money, and then I make more money off of, you know, just doing a ransom once a year versus exposing your data. Okay.
I guess that's the point, right? Like, I think. Yeah, that's a good point. And then the last thing I was just going to say that just made me think about it. A lot of these businesses don't have bank accounts and they're not so good at accounting, even if they're like, you know, generating in the millions in revenue. So I was like, I wonder if that would be the only like blessing for a cannabis business if it happened. But regardless, it's patient data. It's still, I mean, there's still so much that's compromised. So, oh my gosh. All right.
I'll say it. I don't want to touch on that. Like, so the new bank accounts are, you know, cryptocurrency, right? And so we see that a lot. But the hacks that are web one, web two, they still apply. If I hack onto your system, I put a key logger and I get access to your wallet, game over.
That scares me.
Yeah, it's super simple. You got to do the basics. And that's what we hammer home at Sivatar.ai. You can go to our website, okay. You know, pricing's on the website. You can subscribe, you know, and look at free value. You'll actually get a free assessment. You'll get free scans. And if you see that your website has vulnerabilities or your external presence has vulnerabilities just from that free scan, we're able to fix it. We don't charge you to tell you what's wrong. You probably already know you have challenges. We charge you to fix it and then we'll maintain it fixed. And so it's literally what cybersecurity should be that we had to create in 2019 when we started this company. Please check us out. We really are democratizing cybersecurity, making it effortless and affordable.
All right, Corey, thank you so much for joining Cannabis Business Minds.
Okay, thank you, Simone.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's show. Please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoyed this, leave us a 5-star review. Make sure that you share this episode on your social media and tag us in the Instagram stories. You can find us wherever you go on social media. Just look up Cannabis Business Minds. Have an idea for the show or something that you want to talk about? Shoot us an email at podcast@cannabisbusinessminds.com.